from Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Limitless, Minneapolis. This is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are grind and emphasizing uniqueness. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. Okay, so calendar math lined up such that Dale and I went to Gen Con like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Where we're sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From where you're listening to this, dear listener, it was like a month or so ago.
Yeah.
But this is the first time I've had an opportunity to tell you what happened.
Yes.
Which is, we had a good time. We pitched to some publishers. We'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But the main bit of news I want to talk about is Dale and I signed some copies of Glom on the Gen Con show floor.
That's amazing.
So hype.
Which is like insane.
High five.
And here's the thing, those folks, they've only got half the set, so they got to find the two of you.
Aha.
Yeah,
out in the wild.
Catch
to complete
Pokemons.
The yeah, exactly. But definitely as a little silly moment. We talked about this at Origins. Our publisher rep, Sydney, who's been great to us, was like, "Oh, you should, when you're here, you should sign copies." And we're like, "What?"
Yeah.
Like, that's a goofy thing.
Yeah.
It didn't feel real, and it still does seem silly. But it's like a little moment. It's like, you know what? There are game designers who kind of their whole career, they fantasize about signing a copy of their work on the floor of the biggest gaming convention in the world, I think, at least in the U.S.
Yeah.
Like, and it's maybe a little unfair that we took a different route there that, you know, and so we should appreciate it.
Mm.
And so I'm trying to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Even if it's kind of silly. But it was great. Dale had a great time, and because of that, I had a great time, because that's how it works. And we drove there, drove back. Nothing more to say.
Cool. Ellen, you were on here. You were sick this weekend?
Yeah, well, that's why I said that when we talked about going and watching Star Trek last Thursday.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I was like, okay, I have an ear infection that really laid me out for weekend plus. So I did.
The plus is now.
The plus was Thursday.
Oh, okay.
The
and
plus
Friday.
Is now. There should be like fog rolling in from behind me when I say that. Like,
the plus is now. It's like one of those kind of like important sounding phrases that's full of nothing.
It means absolutely
nothing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We can make a website called The Plus, and then it could sell like woo stuff.
Perfect.
Anyway. So I was just kind of laid low the entire weekend and did a bunch of nothing. We watched Good Omens season 2. Eric started watching that documentary on Netflix about Bernie Madoff. Boo. And I played all of a fun escape the room adventure game on mobile called Agent A, which was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my weekend. It sucked, but the game was cool.
So mixed experience.
Yes.
Next.
I'm on here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put myself on here. Someone else did. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm doing a game jam this weekend.
That's cool.
It's actually a really cute story.
Yay!
A friend of mine is running a game jam just amongst a group of friends for her husband because he's been really interested in making games.
Yeah.
Yay.
He's actually been working on a game. I'm going to put him on blast now, I guess. He's working on a game through... what's it? The Fortnite has like a game making thing now? An
Unreal Engine for Fortnite.
Yes. Something which like is that. Like, yeah.
I mean, I've got criticisms. But as a tool for someone who like doesn't want to set up a development tool chain.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I've played through what he's made so far. He's actually like coding.
Nice.
He did not expect to be coding. but at any rate, it's like a whole, she's been setting this up for him, and so we're going to be participating in it. Me and my brother are like helping do it.
Yeah.
They haven't done Game Jam before, so we're like helping them kind of run it. It's at my brother's house.
Fun.
So, yeah.
That's this really weekend?
Fun. It is this weekend.
Oh, yeah. It's off by a bit, because the Twin Cities playtest is this week.
Yeah.
Next month.
Yes.
We'll see.
Oh,
we'll
no,
see.
I brought it up, and he put it on his calendar now.
Nice.
That's exciting.
Actually, that's a good point. I should have, like, a bunch of people show their games off. For
sure, yeah.
That's
a good
fantastic.
Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a game. I love the idea of doing, like a little private game jam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a salon.
It's a birthday gift, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know.
What a cool idea.
It wasn't a surprise. She was initially thinking, yeah, it would be fun to be a surprise, right?
Surprise, you're working this weekend.
Right. I was like, no. but I think it's just the sweetest thing that she's running out this whole thing.
Well, it's great. I mean, you're going to be there to guide it. And, like, what what an amazing way to do it for the first time.
Yeah, right.
Just to have
yeah.
you over a shoulder. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Lucky guy.
Charles is really, really excited, I think partly because he's having people over at his house.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a lot of people at his house yet.
He's a homeowner, but he's not like a party guy.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like doing a lot of prep. Like he's trying to set up a whole thing because we're having
all
some
the
people.
Dips in the right place. And a lot of pressure.
Yeah, well, having people online participate as well. So it's like hybrid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like it'll be really fun. I'm That's looking cool. forward to it.
Let's play those games.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll let y'all know about it. It'll be good.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right, folks. It's topic time. Up first, it's Ellen. I'm trying to do transition thing.
you did a good job, I think. It felt different than what we usually do.
Nightgames.club/feedback.
What we usually do is like, huh? Something like that.
That Close. Is an accurate description.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but yeah.
You just actually put like
so
some
Ellen,
words to
what
it.
Is your topic?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I ruined it, Mark. I'm so sorry.
No, I set us down that path.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so my topic is grind.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're skateboarding and...
No, that'd be sick.
No.
No, I'm talking about the other kind of grind.
Yeah.
Not anything you're playing and... Yeah.
So, like, specifically, though, what kind of grind are we talking about? Because it's like... That's not a... That's
like
just
Dark
a
Roast
word.
Or...
Yeah. There's a lot of grinds. No.
No. Okay, so...
We're, like, playing dumb over here.
I know.
You and I are the worst right now.
No.
Steven, your shtick is when you start a topic, you're like, so what does that mean? And my shtick is like, grind. We think of it this way, but what if it's not?
Yeah.
Okay. So I grind in, to put on the Steven hat for a second.
Yep.
When I talk about grind, I'm talking about the parts of some games where you're just, like, hammering out the actions.
You're going through the motions.
You're going through the motions, mm-hmm. and specifically you're going through those motions, not necessarily because those motions are inherently fun anymore. Maybe they were at first, another
one.
Yeah,
sure.
But because you have a, you know, intermediate, like, a goal that's a little further out, mm-hmm. and you want to hit that goal.
Yeah, okay.
And then oftentimes the game will replace that goal with another goal, and you'll grind some more.
Sure.
But I think it takes lots of different forms when you say something grindy. So when you say something's grindy, what you're really talking about is it has a particular type of emotional experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is like, I still want to play, but there's this thing I've got to get through so the fun can happen again.
You know, it's really fascinating the way you're describing grind to me in such a negative light.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because...
Okay.
Good. I was hoping we could have this conversation.
Okay. So a lot of times... The way that you're describing grind is accurate. Like, you're trying to do this thing because you want an unlockable or the game's really difficult, I guess, and you're having a hard time getting through it, so you just keep fighting the same boss over and over or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I think that grind can just be, like, relaxing.
Ooh.
Where you're just doing something that you're familiar with and you're comfortable with. And so you're just doing that, and, like, in the meantime, you're watching something on TV or you got a stream up or you're listening to music. Or whatever, you know? Like, it's just, like, an activity for you to do to, like, relax at the end of the day.
I feel sort of similarly in that, like, when you were just saying a grind is the thing you have to do to get to the thing you want to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make me grind. There's no emotional tricks you can do to get me to grind that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can trick me quite easily to grind if it, like, just because it's autonomic or it's simple to do.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've talked about this in the show before. I'm now at the grindy stage of Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it less and less for that reason.
Yeah.
But part of it's my fault because I don't have any goal.
Mm-hmm.
I am just wandering through, finding the things to upgrade my armor, even though combat is a joke in that game and Lynels are dropping like flies. I don't need any upgrades.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just doing it because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's repetitive and it gives you that sort of, like, that scratches that itch.
Yes.
I'm very specifically not interested in the goal of the grind.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's unusual.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah, I feel like that's like half of MMOs is like you just like play it because it's a social thing to do around people that isn't like very intense because
there's like a plausible deniability that there's some point to it.
Yeah.
And you participate in that fiction. but you know in your heart it's not true.
Yeah, ultimately, I feel like the activity, well, at least the way that I have approached MMOs in the past, and admittedly, I don't play a lot of MMOs, so maybe this is a pattern, is that you're just doing a social activity mm-hmm. with people, but yeah. you don't necessarily enjoy the activity. It's just an excuse to get around people that you enjoy
yeah.
being with. Right? Mm-hmm. I treat like a lot of multiplayer games like that, like Fortnite. I don't play Fortnite. Well, I enjoy Fortnite.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there, because I'd yank that whole dimension out of this grind conversation.
Oh, okay.
Because that your motivations for doing those things, like, I mean, I'll stand in line at the county fair if yeah. I'm hanging out with friends.
Sure.
I'm not interested in that Ferris wheel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Like, but it doesn't mean that, like, the standing in line has anything to do with anything.
Sure.
Right?
I suppose
I don't know why. It was a metaphor that I did not need.
Okay.
No, I'm glad you brought it up, though.
Yeah, because... you're drawing the line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saying with respect to what grind is, at least with respect to this conversation.
I think I think for an MMO, like, yes, there are grindy parts, right? And they're grindy parts when you think of them from a mechanical perspective, because the things that you're doing while you're grinding are maybe not enjoyable if you only had that.
Yeah.
But because of just the scope of an MMO,
mm-hmm.
and it's huge, and there's yeah. so many people, and there's so much content, and right. it's got to mm-hmm. have a particular pace for it to work right.
Yeah.
And then also because it is serving as the backdrop for some pretty, you know, rich social interaction, then it's grind, I guess, in the way that that would serve a game design purpose.
Sure, yeah.
But it doesn't feel grindy in the emotional sense of the word, because okay. people bring in these other things that they're doing while they're playing.
So you're basically only talking about what feels like grind, and not necessarily what is grind, quote unquote.
Well, I just wanted to explore it, because I think this is one of the really interesting things, and I think that I'm the outlier here. I'm in the minority. I just don't like grind. In an MMO, if I'm socializing and I'm like running around getting herbs to make the potions for the raid later, then that makes sense, because there's like a relatively proximal goal of the raid later, and I need to bring the potions so that I do my part for the team.
Yeah.
And I'm also like on Discord chatting with the people, or on yeah. chat chatting with the people, and yeah. dodging the horde, and I've told this story before, calling in my boyfriend to rescue me. Anyway, but like, if I were just playing the game only, it yeah. would feel super grindy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's interesting to me, because like, planning for that external interaction is fascinating to me as like part of the game design decisions around that.
Yeah.
And I just kind of want to explore, I want to explore grind as a topic, because if it weren't for any other type of grind, I'm just not interested.
Okay.
Now, the only exception, and this was interesting that you brought this up, because I realized that the exception comes from, like, quote-unquote grinding out a boss.
Yeah.
Because to me, that doesn't feel like grind. It feels like practice.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
And
yeah, that's how you would describe it too, Stephen, right?
Yeah. I guess they feel similar to me.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. I suppose I'm more focused.
Is it that a lot of people describe that as grind? And yeah. so you're like, no, that's a good thing. But you've kind of give it in on also describing it as grind.
Yeah, I guess that might be what.
And that's kind of why you're defending grind a little bit.
A little bit, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But on the other side, Ellen, you're the one of us who plays free-to-play mobile games.
I do.
Yes.
I do.
Those have no goal at all.
Right.
Yeah, get the next horse.
Right. That's you're grinding till you get the next horse, and then you got to do the same thing, and that's just grind. That's just what grind is.
Yeah, and I do play lots of those games, and I play none of them for very long.
Right.
Right. I don't know. You played that horse game.
Except for the horse game.
Except and the dragons game, too.
Yeah, I did.
So I don't think that's...
But that was more of a... No, that was...
Yeah.
Well, okay, to be fair to Ellen, though, like, when you were saying, like, you're the one of us that doesn't like grind, I'm like, I hate grind. And then I just described how much of it I'm doing in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
I think we're all like that, right?
Yeah.
That's the problem with grind.
Right.
Nobody
right.
likes it. And we all freaking do it.
Yeah, well...
Why do we even do it? Why do we do it? I understand why we do it,
because we're monkeys. Like,
exactly. Like, there's a psychological thing, and there's a whole, I'm not going to get into that, but, like, because, like, it's, you know, it's just Skinner boxes or whatever. But, like, why do we keep putting these in games, developers?
That's a really good question.
That's what I don't get.
Yeah.
Because I think it serves a purpose in some cases, like in an RPG, like a turn-based RPG or whatever, when you got levels, and, like, there's a boss. And the boss is really hard, and like you could like beat it if you like were really tactically advanced and knew all the strategies and whatnot. But like a lot of times, people will allow you to like grind up levels so you don't have to.
Yeah. Right, because in a turn-based RPG, grind is a proxy for skill.
Yeah.
Because you don't, there's no twitch reflexes. Yes. I mean, strategy is one thing. Yeah. And I'm not saying those games don't have, like, skill-based challenges of any kind.
Right.
But they're not the same as, you know, grinding out a boss in Dark Souls or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the, right, yeah, so I think you're not talking about grind then.
Oh, dang it, okay.
Well, I don't know. No, I think you are.
Okay.
Yeah?
Because that's what people describe grind, that's where the term comes
you're
from.
You're going to grind out some levels so I guess, well, I mean, boss.
There's the activity of doing it, but I suppose I'm trying to put it in a small little prison of things that are pointless.
Well, the point is to beat the boss.
Well, right. The point is that, but well, like,
right. But what I'm saying is, it's a proxy for practice and skill.
Yes.
Therefore, it provides the emotional satisfaction.
Oh,
what you know,
you.
Training for a big match and having
totally
that paid
sense.
Off.
Yes.
That do you know what I mean? It just provides it in a different way.
Yeah.
That mechanically is identical to other kinds of grind that have no value.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that you've kind of captured what I think is the purpose of grind from a game design perspective in what type of emotional experience you're wanting, and that is to serve as a contrast to the payoff. That's all it is. It's just to serve as a contrast to the payoff.
Yeah.
And you can get, I think, a similar emotional experience to when you're like practicing on a hard boss. It's just that you know when there's a, it's just, you can see the end, you can see the finish line when there's a grind that's based on like a level or the number of items you need to have to do this thing. You know, you have a, there is a clear end goal. You can see that really clear line. It's not just like, you know, you're trying to get that last little collectible and you've got to spin exactly the right way and hit the button exactly the right way. Otherwise you're going to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know when you're going to hit it. You just have to keep practicing until you do. That is, I think, maybe a bigger emotional payoff when you hit that.
Yeah.
But also, like, you might just be more likely to give up because there's you don't see yourself getting closer per se.
Sure.
And I think one of the things that makes grinding, like you would grind out a level or grind out some consumables for something or do like grind out a bunch of quests or whatever so you can get the cool amount, is that you can see that incremental progress.
Yeah.
And that is motivating to keep going. That progress is motivating. You've got a little bit of like, what's the word? Like sunk cost dynamics in as well. And so I think that's why it comes up pretty frequently, because it is an effective way to create that kind of contrast. What's interesting to me is like what seems grindy to one person can also not seem grindy to another.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how you deal with it. Because like you've, I think, Mark, you've talked about like you don't really like the cooking in Breath of the Wild.
Oh, crafting in all games can just go jump in a lake.
Like, right. Okay. And I some games I don't like crafting, and some games I do. Like, I really like the cooking in Breath of the Wild. I haven't played Tears of the Kingdom yet, but I really like doing it. It's like, mushroom, ding. Anyway, so, but like, that didn't feel grindy to me because even though it had an aspect of the grind, I would still describe it as grind, but it didn't feel grindy.
I don't know.
I wouldn't describe the cooking in Breath of the Wild as grindy.
Oh, really?
I would describe it as pointless, but...
Gotcha.
But no, because because it's not necessary to do any of the things in that game.
It's completely optional.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with an example of a game that I've, like, grinded for that was just, like, because I wanted the unlockable or something, because I don't know, it felt tedious.
Well, I think partly is that grind is a definition that players put on games. It's not something that developers tend to put on games.
Yeah,
not that those conversations don't happen in the halls of wherever.
Yeah,
you know, especially like sort of, you know, dark pattern stuff or whatever to get people to play more. Whatever, accepting that, I think it's generally, so when you think about like what is grind, I sort of tolerated, like you you tend to exclude all the things that might be quote unquote grindy that you didn't take offense to. And so you're trying to think of something else, and it's sort of an impossible definition.
Because
mechanic, you cannot define it mechanically,
right?
Yeah,
right, as much as it seems like you should be able to, like you really can't. It's very contextual.
But I want to try.
Listen, I'll sit back and see if you can manage.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Let's try for five
more
minutes.
It's only an hour-long podcast.
No, we'll try for five more minutes and see what we come up with, and then we'll handle it. We'll hand it to the listeners.
Get on your time timer.
It's on my desk. It's
been a while since we had that. But mechanically, how would you even describe grind? Like, because it... you win... it's too late. I'm too tired.
Is that blood coming out of your ears?
I don't know. I need more time. I'll come up with a talk or something and then never do it. Work.
Well, here's how we do it. We have to give a wrong definition and then the listeners will correct us.
Oh, that's perfect. Actually, yeah, that makes it a competition. That makes it better
No, I don't know. So you put that challenge to us, Mark, and I was thinking, okay.
Well, I think a lot of people say the simplest definition is grind is doing something over and over again.
Yeah.
And immediately I could say no. There's way too many exceptions to that.
Right.
But I think that's a common and maybe even commonly accepted simple definition of grind.
Yeah.
Well, so is a gameplay loop.
Oh, there you go. That's the difference. What I'm talking about. Right. It's the difference between a satisfying one and one that is like so like, this is just repeating over and over again. It's like, wasn't that what games are? It's like, yeah, but
yeah.
This one is not fun, or it's not, or it's just appealing to my emotions and not my satisfaction. And you know what I mean? Like, I think it's impossible to really actually properly define it. And it's going to be different for different people. Like, you know, Tetris is pretty grindy, but like
that's
also
true.
You won't find a lot of people complaining about that as a part of the game.
That's
because it's core to the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not in even an exploitive, emotionally manipulative way, I might argue. But it has all the hallmarks of a grind if you use that simple definition.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I would settle on it's a unfun part of the gameplay loop that people go through in order to reach a fun part.
So, I mean, the way that you were describing it, Mark, makes it seem like it's just a critique. It's a criticism, and it's a term for that purpose alone.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not
It's sort of the failure of, I mean, the hallmarks of a thing that can be thus determined grindy are sort of repetitive actions.
Yes.
That is a common ingredient.
Yeah.
But it tends to be something you say about a gameplay experience that fails to do what it probably wanted to do.
Hmm. Yes.
Right?
Right.
And again, accepting the kind of game designs in free-to-play games that are specifically meant to exploit that part of you. Setting that aside.
Yeah.
Things can feel grindy when to the developer they were trying to make them feel progressive and leveling and you know.
I'm reminded of Assassin's Creed because you know eventually they added the levels and junk.
Yeah, when they got more RPG like, but they didn't change enough of it to satisfy the sort of RPG leveling.
Yeah.
And then there were too many levels.
Yeah.
And so I would say the critique I would have of that is it's kind of grindy.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certainly other people who would be like, no, it's exactly the right amount of levels and just the amount of time between them. And the amount of repetitive tasks felt good because I got better at, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, it is kind of to taste.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I feel I have a strong argument in the case of those games, but.
Sure.
I'm saying that there is no, you can't really define
it. Yeah. Okay. And I think that, that makes me feel more comfortable with the idea that you can't define it. If it's really meant to, if the term is meant to be more of a critique and not meant to be useful from a game designer sense.
Yeah.
Because I think that's part of what I was struggling with when I was trying to come up with how do you mechanize grind. It's like, as a game designer, what does that mean? Does that mean this player has to do the thing over and over again? But like, if they enjoy it, then it's not a grind, so then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Even if they're doing something over and over again, like, it doesn't, that doesn't make it bad. Can make it like I was describing it before. It can be a familiar thing that you enjoy. Tetris is a familiar thing that people enjoy.
Yep.
And they'll just play through it and
it doesn't even have to be like unique or or intellectually satisfying.
Right.
I mean, think about like, I don't know, like you ever have like a chip of ice falls onto the kitchen counter.
Yeah.
And one of the things you can do is hold it in your hand and watch it till it melts.
Yeah.
Little things like that. Because you don't want to throw it away. You're not close enough to the sink.
Right.
And so, like, you're kind of grinding through that last piece of ice.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Right. It's just enjoyable. You see the shapes as it slowly shrinks and, it morphs. That's interesting.
But that game mechanic in a video game.
Right.
And attach points to it and make someone do it over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, just sounds like a grind, right? Yeah. Like, it sounds grindy. But, like, there are plenty of things. So, for it to not be grind, it doesn't need to graduate to, like, super interesting.
Yeah.
Is my point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Yes. Well, I feel comfortable with the knowledge that I have gained today.
Good. That was my goal. That was my goal. And for the record, I don't do that. I take the ice chip and I give it to Dante, my dog. Yeah.
And not everybody has a dog, Ellen.
Well, that should be that's my next goal.
Then you end up with like a bunch of slobber on the ground, probably.
That's from Pixel.
Oh, okay.
The other dog who won't eat the ice chunks.
We got a t-shirt.
I wore the t-shirt.
You
yesterday.
Did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How did it feel?
It's, you know, I've had it for months and months, and it's still amazingly soft.
Yeah.
It's soft when I got it, and it's still soft.
Dale and I each wore the t-shirt to our pitches at Gen Con.
Oh, nice. Representative.
We're little teammates there.
Yeah.
What shirt are we talking about, Steven?
The Nice Games Club t-shirt.
What?
Yeah.
Nice Games Club have a t-shirt?
We do have a t-shirt.
We have a t-shirt.
We have a t-shirt. You can get it at nicegames.club/shirt. It's very comfortable, as we've described. They last a while. Last a long time.
Yeah.
You know, they're good, comfortable. Nice icon on the front.
Yeah.
Yep.
It says Nice Games Club on the back. You can hide that if you don't want people to know it's Nice Games Club shirt. That's kind of weird, but all right, that's fine. You do you with your fashion.
Back to the wall. What he means to say, dear listener,
yes,
is that it's not an advertisement for the show.
Exactly.
It's the logo for you to show to support that, that, you know, like, this is the cool thing you like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for us to put a billboard on you.
No, Yeah, actually.
And what I mean to say that is that the text is very small.
Yeah. Yes.
And on the back.
Yes.
And
if
also,
we wanted it to be a billboard, we'd done a bad job.
We could make a billboard shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's later.
But we wanted it to be a shirt that you could actually, you could wear to your parents' house.
Yeah, yeah. And they won't, they'll be like, oh, that's a cool looking shirt. They'll be like, yeah, it is.
And then you can give them the URL.
Yes.
That's the trick.
NiceGames.club/shirt.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Steven, explain this to me, emphasizing uniqueness.
Okay.
As opposed to letting it hide under a bushel.
So the origin of this topic was I initially put market research on here, and I was like, I don't want to talk about that. I don't do a lot of market research, and I'm not a marketer. I don't really know how to sell games very well. But what I do want to talk about is like understanding what it is about your game that is cool and interesting and different from other games. Like,
Bride with a sledgehammer.
Yes, Bride with a sledgehammer.
Nailed it.
That's the main pitch.
What's the log line? What's the, how do you get the person's attention? What's the hook?
But like, there's two ways to look at this. Because, like, from the game developer perspective, this is something unique about this game that you want to make sure stands out from your, through your design and things, right? Like, you want to make sure that my 2D pixely platformer stands out from all the other 2D pixely platformers. And why is that? It's because you jump 3 times instead of 2. I don't know, whatever. But there's also the aspect of it from a marketing perspective, because like just because you could jump 3 times doesn't mean that.
Right. If you have really good handling in your precision platformer, it's kind of hard to put that on the back of the box.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Handling was a better term than 3 jump. So like, I guess I want to talk about it from like 2 sides. Cause I think that it's important to know that as a developer, the distinctiveness between these 2 things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like just because you have a really tight, really solid platformer does not mean that that is something that you can put on your description and people will flock to it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a very early mistake a lot of developers make is to talk about like, this is such a well-made game I did.
Yes.
And I think of a lot of like buyers in the market, they're like, great, I wasn't going to buy any other type of game.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Yeah. And
right. Yeah. Right? You need, there needs to be a hook, I guess. And frankly, that hook doesn't necessarily have to be super unique, but it can be like a fancy art style, interesting animations. It can be the way you jump. I don't know. Like maybe your jumps are super floaty. And
well,
that's
I like how you described it as like separate from the game design.
Yes.
Because if your game is just a very competent 2D pixel art platformer.
Yeah.
That might die in the market,
right.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad design. It doesn't mean you made a mistake as a designer.
Right.
It means you're going to have to work a little harder to get people to look at it because they've seen enough of that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't – I hope you're not saying that – or I mean maybe it's worth deciding from that side of it to say, well, maybe what I need to do is put a little bit of a stamp on it, even if it's not what I really wanted to do.
Oh, I am not saying that.
Okay.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I don't think that that's a good way – I don't know. Yeah. The part of my thing is the way that I think of games is not from a marketing standpoint. I know Business Steven is knocking on the door, I guess, going, what are you talking
outside.
About? Yeah. But, like, I do think there's a difference between that because, like, the game you make, maybe it isn't, like, sellable, right? And not a lot of people will buy it just because it's not, like, super unique. But it's a game. It is going to be, by definition, because you made it, it's going to be something that's special, right?
Yeah, you could try to copy everything, and it's still going to be all yours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that that's important that your game continues to hold on to that. I don't want people to think that, like, because this game doesn't have a hook, like a really good, strong hook, I have to, like, throw a hook onto it in order to make it sell better. And, like, frankly, I'm saying that because I guess I'm thinking of this in respect to, like, games as art and not games as products that need to be sold.
Yeah.
Realistically, if you have a business and you need to make money, then you have to think about that in some respect. Mm-hmm. Otherwise,
yeah, you don't. I guess what you're saying is you don't need another reason to tell people that they're already hearing it enough.
Yeah.
The back of their mind.
Yeah.
In all the various articles about how to sell your game on Steam or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to add to that course.
Exactly.
Okay.
But I think there's like different ways you can approach this idea of uniqueness. Like I remember we had a guest on Nintendrew. He had made a 2D platformer.
Carl.
Carl. Yes.
Carl.
C.A.R.L.
Yes. And like a lot of
stands for something, we were told.
Yeah.
I forgot what.
I forgot. What it was too.
But we were also told it didn't matter.
Ultimately, yeah. But like I think that like that game was sold on the fact that it was a return to form from old platformers. It was like a mascot platformer sort of thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so like that's that uniqueness.
And that angle's a bit of a trick.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like if you didn't say that about it, you probably wouldn't come up with that as a way to describe it yourself.
Yeah.
But it's also accurate,
right,
as a way to describe it.
Right.
So it's not really tricking you, even though it's a little bit of a trick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's a really good example.
Yes. So I like that idea. So like, it's just because like your game is maybe like is similar to another game, and it's just like, you know, another. I keep saying 2D platformers because there's a ton of 2D platformers, right?
Yeah.
You can make your game stand out in a market sense by just like hitting on what can be unique about it, even if it's not necessarily unique.
Yeah.
And that's hard to and it's hard to say.
Here's
right?
the thing.
But, yeah.
Even if it's not the most interesting part of the game.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, let players discover some of those things.
Yeah.
Like, even if you think the thing you put the most effort into, the thing you think is what makes it stand out in terms of the library of video games.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the thing you sell it on.
Yes.
You're not betraying your game
right.
if you don't put that in the marketing. Mm-hmm. And instead lean on something else. It's easier to explain
yeah.
little bit more, because once you got them, then they'll find all that other stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
All that's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I think people tend to really, they don't separate those two ideas.
Yes.
Of what's sort of like technically different and unique about the game versus mm-hmm. like the positioning of the game. Because there's, if you describe how a game is and all the things that are unique and interesting about it,
yeah.
you could theoretically come up with like a perfect taxonomy of what is specific about this game.
Yeah.
But if you're going to position it in the marketplace,
right.
there's 12 ways you could do it that are equally good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think, yeah, like you were saying earlier, I think it is important to emphasize the difference between like the game design and the marketing aspect of it. Because from a game designer perspective, like what is unique about it is kind of what is driving you to make this game, right? Like, I don't know, you really like Mario games, but you were like, I wish Mario had a sharper jump or something.
Yeah, or could jump 3 times.
Yeah, yeah, that's unique. Ooh, no one's done that before. heck.
Oh no.
I was just counting with wahoos.
Yeah. Yeah. That is something that is driving you to make the game, right? That's something that is unique to you, but it's not necessarily something that can a player will understand, right?
Yeah.
The way that you handle is different from Mario. Like, that's not necessarily something that'll get people on board. It might get some particular people on board because they don't like Mario games, but they like platformers. I don't know. But that's not enough, right? Like, it needs to be something different. But you also don't want to focus on that as your only thing. You don't want to focus on what's unique to make your game stand out from a game design standpoint, because that won't necessarily make your game better, and it can potentially make your game different or worse from what you actually wanted to make. Yeah, I feel like I'm being very vague about it because it's like hard to.
Yeah,
it's hard to be specific.
I think it is hard to be specific because I think we're trying to come up with some very general guidelines that cut across genres.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, I was trying to think of like, okay, could we get to something more helpful by running through some examples?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's take the games we worked on and either how we've done it or how we would do it again.
Yeah, well, okay, Fingence is a good example, I think, because, you know, it's a shoot 'em up. And that has a particular type of player, because a lot of them are like score-based, high score. They like a lot of high scores and stuff like that. And Fingence doesn't even have scores.
Yeah.
So we emphasize the teamwork play, because a lot of the design of that of the game is that too. But I also think that like that is a cool hook for the game. It's like it turns the shooting genre and makes it a team cooperative game in a way that I think is appealing to people. At least that's how
I'm
going to
make a pitch to you.
Oh yes.
Because I've thought a little bit about how you might position Fingence in a market.
Oh, okay.
And mechanically, what's unique about that
mm-hmm.
is, and you're going to have to remind me the difference between European and American shoot 'em ups.
Sure.
But isn't one of them is a one-hit kill and one of them has hit bars?
European ones were the ones with hit bars, yeah.
And Fingence is European style, which is not as common.
Yes.
And has its own kind of fans and detractors and stuff.
Yeah.
That and the fact that you tried to design the different characters as like class-based so that they could work together.
Yeah.
And so they'd be each unique and they play differently and all of that. Mechanically, that's what's different about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is that the resulting hook is then the teamwork.
Yes.
I disagree.
Okay.
The resulting hook is this is a party game.
Ah, well, we tried to make it a party game. My brother is not. He was very, very strongly trying to make this game a party or Fingence a party game.
Yeah.
And he's very dissatisfied with the amount of party game it is. But I guess it doesn't
Fingence
matter,
is
right?
Fingence is not a traditional party game.
Yeah, sure.
In that, I mean, and four people who've never played any shoot 'em ups before can have a great time.
Yes.
And so that's why I'm comfortable going down this road.
Yes, that's fair.
But mechanically, I wouldn't describe it as a party game
necessarily, because
it is mm-hmm. very much skill-based. It has lots of challenges that escalate.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets really steep, and that's satisfying for certain type of genre player.
Yeah.
But I would say the hook of that game is it's a shoot 'em up, but also Overcooked.
Yeah, well,
and even if that's not maybe the most accurate way to describe it.
Well, and you're exactly illustrating my point, though, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciate that because that is true. Like, that can be a hook for Fingence, is that like it's a party game, even though it's not a party game, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It can be a party game, or it can be advertised as a party game, and then you can get people together to play the game, and they understand the depth of it, and that gets them hooked, right? Like
Yeah, then they'll like it, or they'll have a little fun and put it down.
It's,
you're not deceiving anybody, but there's more to get there to. For people who want to dig.
Yes.
But you can't do all that work for them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that was a good example. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Cooperative shoot 'em up.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a twist on this exercise, like thinking about examples.
Okay.
I wonder if one of the ways to try to start playing around with the idea of your hook or like your to emphasize your uniqueness is try to just summarize the game in like one sentence. Not saying that sentence would end up being on quote unquote the box or the cut, you know, the art or whatever, but like just to get yourself going with it. Yeah. Like, I think that's how I would summarize Vengeance too. Is cooperative. Shoot 'em up.
I think that's step one of like coming up with a marketing spin for a game is to try to
describe and then it. Eventually that can lead you to like a tagline, which kind of does both. It describes and it is also sells it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or you can have a selling hook that can be a whole paragraph, but wouldn't be something you'd put on an ad flyer.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So the example I would use that has that line that is also the tagline is Widget Satchel, which is get widgets, build doohickeys, do mischief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that. That describes so little about what you actually do in that game.
Yes.
But like that is what that game is. Mm-hmm. And that is what we chose to position it as.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say if it was the best choice we could have made for it, but I feel pretty satisfied that we didn't, because one of the things that mechanically what's interesting about that is that you can't die. It's and so the levels are designed around that. Mm-hmm. Progression is designed around that. The enemy encounters are designed around that. Yep. That is probably its biggest mechanical differentiator when it comes to a Metroidvania-style game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not that interesting to put on the back of a box.
No. Yeah.
It doesn't really sell it. It doesn't. If you didn't know that existed, it wouldn't make you, when you discovered it, it wouldn't make you like the game more or less.
Yeah.
It's its own interesting thing that blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you can just discover it. The player just discovers it on their own. So like thinking in the same genre then, just to kind of experiment with some more, I was thinking about other like 2D platformers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was it Ori and the Blind Forest was the first one?
Yeah.
2D platformer with a fast little critter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that would be how I describe
it. That's an example because like I think the advertising, the positioning around that was really very based on its art style.
Yes.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it's a Metroidvania until you play it or read a review.
Yeah.
And I think it actually does kind of a bad job kind of telling you what that experience is going to be like. At least that was my experience when I played the game. I was like, oh, I was really prepared for something way different.
The art feels, the marketing that leads with the art style makes it feel very whimsical and kind of airy and more slow moving.
Yeah.
But you are a fast little critter. You go all over that forest and you're very fast. You can climb so fast and you can zip all over.
Mm-hmm.
Fast little critter.
Yeah.
What are you?
Keep saying fast little critter and I just think Sonic.
Also fast critter.
But also, there's so much backtracking in that game that it actually feels kind of slow.
Mm.
But the critter's fast.
Right, but I think this is now the debate I'm having with you, which is I think that betrays what is the selling point of that game.
Yeah.
Which I might say is more like the sort of spooky discovery of that game. You're a critter in a dark, scary world.
Yeah.
I think that says more than the sort of like, leading with the art as they did about this beautiful, like sort of fairy tale kind of space. I guess I'm not as familiar, but I do remember thinking that like that game was not positioned very well.
Fast little critter, big scary world.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Working.
That also describes Rain World.
Yes, it does.
That's a really good hook for Rain World.
Yes.
Because that game is brutal. And I remember seeing all the GIFs of that game when it was being developed.
Yeah.
And it looked so cool. And then when I learned about what it really was, I was like, oh, not for me, but I'm glad I know.
Yeah.
Because I think it was positioned pretty well as a brutal game.
Yeah. That's how I felt about Cyberpunk. 2049 or whatever. At the number
70.
One of them years.
One of those,
future.
And I was like, oh, this looks really cool. And then I found out it was first person. I was like, oh, dang it. oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is. I hope that this is helpful for listeners.
It's tricky because it's like, especially when you think of like AAA examples or really successful examples, you do know a lot more about those games because they get more news beats. You see trailers. You tend to know more about them, so it's not as hard. But when you're an indie title and all you have is that one first screenshot on Steam before they click away, like it's really difficult to really pare it down into the sort of distilled reduction of what your thing is.
Yeah.
And in a way that that describes it accurately, but also isn't hung up on all the things that it actually is.
Yeah. Well, and I think that being able to distinguish these traits, right, helps you create your whole marketing campaign around it. So like you'll pick screenshots that emphasize that kind of thing.
Yeah. It helps to I mean, your game might have 30 interesting things.
Yes.
But you don't got time for that.
Right, yeah. And people aren't going to pay attention to any of that either. So, yeah. Like, you just have to focus on one or two important things that you think will get players to at least pay more attention and read the description, right? So you start with, you can start with the screen. I guess the way that I tend to look at, like, store pages is I start with the screenshots. I'm like, oh, okay, this looks interesting. Then I read the description, and then I go to a trailer if I'm more interested. Yeah. I think that might be unique to me.
What that says is that there's no one way people discover these things.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So you kind of have so to. You can't say three things.
Yeah, you tool everything around this idea.
Yeah.
To hook people.
Leave it unmistakable, mm-hmm. Right?
Right, right. Well, yeah, like Hi-Fi Rush, I think, is a good example of this, right? Like, it's just a beat 'em up at the end of the day, but it's rhythm-based in the core. Eh. yes, because it's got beats. I already did the eh.
I know, but they can't see the hair.
I said anyways.
Children.
It's a beat 'em up at the end of the day, but like it's got
I get it.
but it's got a rhythm-based hook, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
That makes it interesting, it makes people look at it more. And the whole game really is designed around that idea. And so, like, its hook makes sense for its marketing campaign, too, which is convenient for that game. But, like, you can't look at that game, aside from maybe the cover, because the cover is just the cover. It's going to be hard to describe it. You can't look at any screenshots or footage of that game without understanding that aspect of the game.
That's an interesting example because, I mean, we're talking about the very common situation where it's a difficult task to distill it down to one thing.
Right.
But sometimes those things do line up.
Yes.
And you've got to know when that happens so you can leverage it.
Yeah.
And
lean
on it. Right?
Right.
I don't know. So, you know, I had this foolish goal of writing a journal about games I play.
Yeah.
Don't check. I think I took it offline so no one could check up on me and how far we are.
I'm sure it's in some show notes of ours. Or
yeah,
other.
Probably.
No, I think I went in there and I took the link and made it private. That's what I'm saying. Because I have a little folder of games, like games I have recently finished, and it's called Games Journal. And these are all the games that I need to add to the journal. And this folder is increasingly big.
Yeah.
But now I feel like I want to go back in there and I want to try like just writing down this one sentence. I'm still stuck on this one sentence thing just because I feel like it's
I feel like it's the
way that I would have to get started on it.
Well, I think a place to start is good.
Yeah.
So I think it's valuable to think that way.
Well, actually this would be a great exercise for our listeners. Mm. Go to our Discord, nicegames.club/discord.
Yeah.
If you're not already a member there. And one, let's hear about the stuff you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great. But also, let's see if we can get some of those one sentence descriptors that are not. And don't worry about it being tied to what the game is.
Yeah.
What's the first impression you want to leave?
Yeah.
And let's talk about it.
Yeah, I also want to try if you want to try to write one of those one sentence descriptors about a game that you've played and you think other people have played, put it in there and see if we can guess it.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Like, pick a game and give it a new angle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see if we can figure out what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's good. Choose any of these mini games to participate in.
Yeah.
But I think that's the kind of thing about this that, like, it's telling because you can't really just do this in your head.
Yeah.
You should be testing this on folks.
Yes.
Right? And you don't need to do a whole A-B marketing test, but, like, try it out. See if what you're thinking gets across when you're talking to someone.
Yeah.
The quickest way to do it is just to find the person next to you. But if you have a community of other players or, say, podcast listeners, that's a good place as well. Because you're not the best judge, we talked about this before, of, like, what is interesting about your game.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, and also partly because you've got all these systems and rules and all this stuff in your head about this game.
Yeah.
It's hard to make all that fit into a tiny funnel and come up with a sentence.
Yeah. You know what? Someone in the Discord, post a game you're working on, and everybody else come up with a tagline for it.
Yeah.
Let's see that.
Like yeah.
So you got options, folks.
Okay.
I did not stick to one idea, and let that be a lesson to you.
When does this episode come out? Because I feel like I have to put a calendar. Like people will be posting lots of things in there, and you must go in there and answer their questions.
All right, that's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and a retro texture pack. Reply on the various platforms if you dare choose, or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. You could also keep things uncasual, per our many suggestions in the last topic. Really, it's on you. Keep it however you like. Mm-hmm. Next week, oh my, we'll be doing a Nice Games Jam.
Yay!
But that's it for this week. So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
A good one.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.